Dr. Pipe is the former chief of the Division of Prevention and Rehabilitation at the University of Ottawa Heart Institute. And he is our in-house heart expert. Of course, we required one when I screwed up and let my heart fail. So now we have to have somebody around that can keep us off the rocks, as it were. Here's some interesting stats. One person dies every 7 minutes from a heart attack or a stroke. Every 7 minutes. It's alarming. I was almost one of them, as I just mentioned, with a massive coronary. But I'm still here to talk about it, and that's the good thing. And now we'll be talking about it with Dr. Pipe. Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And it's great to hear you sounding very well.
Oh, thank you. Now, before we get into me, am I right? Last time you were on the air, you were just getting ready to go to China?
That's probably correct, yeah.
How did we make out over there?
Well, we didn't do all that well, overall, the tournament was a great success. And, you know, China's always fascinating. It just changes every week, every month, every hour virtually. So it's a phenomenally interesting place to visit.
On a scale of 1 to 10, where do they sit? And this is totally off script here, but you're probably the best person to ask us. In terms of medicine and health, where do they sit in comparison to us?
Well, they're catching up very, very quickly. And in certain areas, they probably are on a par or even lead. I mean, the whole nature of Chinese development over the last 35 or 40 years is absolutely astounding. And developments in medicine and science in China are no exception. I think it's true to say, though, that for the most part, they have been learning very aggressively and very robustly from those of us in the West. And so the introduction of Western-style medicine on a huge scale has been probably the most significant change in Chinese healthcare over the last 25 or 30 years.
Yeah, I find that whole culture over there fascinating, and especially their medicines. Obviously, since I had the heart attack, medicine has been a very important part of my life, and so I've been doing a lot more research and reading, et cetera, than I ever did my entire life. And I'm sure most heart patients would have that same story to tell you, Dr. Pipe. Just a quick update on me. I'm almost doing too well, if that's even possible. I've been adhering to the life change suggestions by the cardiologists and the team that I'm working with, and I have done all of those things to the T, and feeling great. So as I tell most people that will give me the time of day and listen to me, if I have another heart attack, if I should pass away from heart ailment, it will not be my fault. How's that? It won't be at my hands.
Well, I think the very good news is that, you know, our ability to manage heart disease has been transformed in my professional lifetime. You doing all of those ordinary things extraordinarily well in terms of applying medication, lifestyle change, et cetera, you're not going to die for a long time.
Thank you, my friend. I love hearing that. I want to talk to you about the medicine part of it first. Actually, before we get into that, let's get this one over with. There's been studies recently, I think as far back as 2017, if I'm not mistaken, where just putting a stent in a person's heart, which was the go-to remedy for arteries that are, you know, obstructed. They're saying now that that's not necessarily the right thing or the only thing that we can do. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, well, I think it's very important to kind of clarify what the nature of both that new evidence is, because there's a lot of misunderstanding. It's important to understand that we're talking about the management of stable or previously undiagnosed heart disease in the studies that have been recently released. Whereas those who, you know, go to hospital in an ambulance, it's recognized they're having a heart attack, they're taken directly to an operating suite or an angiogram suite and have a stent placed or have emergency bypass surgery, that's acute life-threatening heart disease. And that's an entirely different focus of study. So if you're having intermittent chest pain and, you know, you're not feeling very well, maybe a little bit more excessively tired, and you go to your doctor and he says, you know, I think we just better check and see if there isn't, in fact, some evidence of heart disease, and the tests are concluded, and yes, you have heart disease, and yes, there are areas in those diseased blood vessels that look narrow. The evidence is now clear, or at least from this massive study that was just released, that if we begin treating that heart disease with all of the medicines that we would ordinarily use to treat individuals after a heart attack, but not put in a stent and not do surgery because there's no urgent need to do so, that the outcomes are very, very similar. So it's the management of stable heart disease. And there's another really important point of that recent study that is essential to understand. If there is a significant narrowing or imminent blockage of the principal artery that feeds most of the important parts of your heart, then stents or bypass surgery will be considered. But otherwise, the evidence is pretty solid that in the absence of an acute event, managing robustly with medicines that we know can transform the likelihood of problems in the future is just as good as intervening with a stent or surgery.
And I want to talk about that. Dr. Pipe, can you stay with us for a couple more minutes? I need to take a quick break.
Absolutely.
Dr. Andrew Pipe on the line, professor in the Faculty of Medicine, University of Ottawa Heart Institute, and former chief of the Division of Prevention and Rehabilitation at the University of Ottawa Heart Institute as well. Interesting stuff if you're in the age group that I happen to be in, for sure. More Journal after this, don't you dare go away. Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Angela Viola. He is Mike Mooring behind the glass today, sitting in for Stephen Labadie.
Yeah. Wherever he might be.
Or Mooring.
Mooring. You know what?
We haven't determined exactly which one that is yet. Derek Brandeo and Jessica Ellis at The Fan, keeping us honest today. Hey, folks, the Canadian Ice Fishing Expo, I don't know whether I mentioned this, but I will mention it now, is all set to attract large crowds once again at their new home. That's right. They have a new home, Michael. Georgian College in Barrie this year, because they outgrew their previous home. And so now they're at Georgian College in Barrie. Mark these dates down. That's December 14th and 15th. Two big days. I remember when this first started, it was only one day. Two big days for the biggest ice fishing extravaganza in Canada. In Canada. The Canadian Ice Fishing Expo, it's called. And for just $8. $8. Like, why not 10 or 12? I mean, that would be cheap at that price. $8 not only gets you in the door, but it also gives you parking, free parking. Most places, $8 doesn't even cover your parking.
Not even close.
Yeah. And a plethora of prizes, apparently. They're giving away all kinds of great things once you get in. That's all included in that $8. By the way, the expo features over 50 exhibitors, many with the latest in ice fishing gear and high-tech products, just in time for Christmas. It is Christmas. Yeah, 14th, 15th. It's like a couple of weeks away. Each day will feature some of the top ice sticks in the country, including our very own The Doc, Gord Pizer, along with Will Wegman and David Chong. Seminar MC and open mic panel host is Big Jim McLaughlin. He's always fun to spend some time with. He's a great guy. Apparently, he's not as big as he used to be. So I don't even know why they call him big.
I keep hearing that.
I know. Georgian College is the place, and it's right off of the 400, just a stone's throw from Lake Simcoe, which, coincidentally, is Ontario's most popular ice fishing destination. How convenient is that?
Couldn't get any better.
December 14th to 15th at Georgian College. If you like ice fishing, then don't be left out in the cold. Visit the Canadian Ice Fishing Expo.com website and book your tickets and check out all the goodies.
When are we shooting a Fish in Canada episode, ice fishing episode, by the way?
Oh, it's coming, Michael.
Oh, okay. I'm just checking.
It's coming.
I'll make sure.
Oh, yeah. On the line with us is Dr. Pipe, professor in the Faculty of Medicine, University of Ottawa Heart Institute. And we call him our in-house heart expert because I'm in need of one, apparently. Well, I don't think I am, but they say I am. Who knows? Anyways, so there's a couple of things. First of all, so the stint thing that we said, Andrew, when people are saying, well, they're saying they're not, you don't need them anymore. That's not necessarily the case. If it's an emergency like mine was, there is no opportunity to repair the damage by good health. So you have no option. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and the kind of emergency that many people experience, and I assume you were one of them, is that you get a complete blockage of a blood vessel as a result of a blood clot that forms as a result of the crud on the inside of your vessel suddenly bursting and causing a clot to form, and that's very different from what we would call stable heart disease, where individuals might have some grumbling symptoms and maybe feeling more tired, et cetera, and the investigations reveal that they've got narrowing of the arteries, but no acute blockage of an artery. And that's a very different situation. So it's very important to emphasize we're talking about apples and oranges when we try to compare these two different kinds of situations.
Now, we've all heard these stories. In fact, I'm sure that there's people listening right now that haven't just heard it, but they've lived it, where you have perfectly healthy individuals who already, all their life, they've been living the right lifestyle. You know, they don't smoke, they don't drink, they eat, you know, like a canary. They work out and exercise, they run marathons, they bike all over the place. Great health. But they die of a heart attack. Like, how do you explain that then?
Well, we know that, you know, the conventional risk factors that you've identified, smoking, being inactive, having an inappropriate diet, all of which, if superimposed, by the way, on family history, are fundamentally important here. But those risk factors don't explain everything. And what we know is that heart disease, and to a certain extent, the kind of diseases that occur in the blood vessels to the brain that can lead to a stroke, or the kind of diseases that develop in the blood vessels leading to the leg, which can lead to, you know, poor circulation and ultimately you end up in amputation, etc. These processes begin as a result of a kind of an exuberant attempt to heal a little injury to the surface of the blood vessel wall. And so are there minor imperfections in those blood vessels that have been there from birth? Are there things that incidentally have caused an injury a microscopic injury to a blood vessel, and the tissue starts to try to heal itself and it becomes very exuberant? Those are all, you know, unanswered questions in terms of how can we identify when those lesions occur and how can we intervene. But it is important to understand that the conventional risk factors do account for an enormous and a significant burden of heart disease. And to sort of say, geez, I know guys that have, and I know you're not suggesting this, Angelo, but, you know, I do hear people say, well, geez, I know guys that, you know, ran marathons, practiced yoga, ate nothing but fish oil, and they had a heart attack. I might have, you know, it's kind of like saying, well, I know kids that play in the street and never got hit by a car, so let's get out there in the street and play. We wouldn't follow that kind of logic, but the situation you described raises questions that we want to try to find the answers to.
All right. So you're telling me, if I understand this correctly, that any damage that we as humans have done to our hearts and the vessels that supply blood to your heart, any damage that we've done in the past is reversible by just changing to the proper lifestyle, regardless at that point of any family history and or, you know, prior medical issues that might have come up. You can, by changing your lifestyle, you can reverse things. It's never too late.
I'd be very careful about the use of the word reverse things or reversible. You can very definitely, distinctly, and dramatically modify the trajectory of, like, that you would be on without intervening in those areas. If you have got crud on the inside of your vessels, yeah, we can do things that will start to shrink that crud. But you're probably always going to have some remnants of that crud or scarring on the walls of your blood vessels. So I don't want to give the idea or the misconception that, yeah, if you just do A, B, C, D, and E, everything is going to return to being 100% normal. That's not true. But what we can say is that if you do A, B, C, D, and E, we can dramatically and distinctly reduce the likelihood of risk of problems occurring again in the future.
Okay. Well, that's encouraging for sure. Yeah. Now, one thing I found out, Andrew, during this whole process, I keep joking around about, you know, my lack of physical fitness, et cetera. But, you know, at the end of the day, quite honestly, I'm probably as fit as the next person for the simple reason that I'm very active for at least 150 days a year, maybe even more. Because when you're in the field, you work and you are lifting, you're bending, you're moving, you're doing all those things. But I found out that none of that really is good cardio. I found out that means nothing. I might as well have been sitting on the couch all my life because it didn't help me.
Yeah, we know that the kind of exercise or physical activity that you're involved in can be important. And many people make the observation that you've just done. It's very accurate. Yeah, you know, I'm doing a bunch of things 150 days of the year. We know that your heart in particular and your circulatory system in particular, like the kind of exercise or the physical activity in which your heart rate gets raised and it's maintained there for 20, 25, 30 minutes. And if that's done regularly, that can have a very powerfully protective effect. And, you know, that's what we would term aerobic exercise, meaning that you're exercising at a steady state and you're not really, and you're increasing your heart rate and you're not going into something we call oxygen deficit. Whereas, you know, if you're in a gym and you're pumping iron frantically for 15 minutes at a time, et cetera, you're doing a very different form of exercise, which has advantages of a very different kind, but does not necessarily correlate to increased heart health. And I think a takeaway message here is for most people, it's all about doing some ordinary things every day. And I think we've done a disservice in the sense that we've kind of portrayed exercise as athletic or sporting activities rather than just going for a walk with your dog every day. You know, one of the world's greatest exercise scientists once said, everybody should take their dog for a walk every day, even if they haven't got one. And it's just that simple walking on a regular basis, which can confer a very distinct advantage. And I would say, as I say to patients who have heart disease, look, you're being physically active on a near daily basis is going to confer upon you an advantage that is equal to that of all of your medicines. And this is just such a fundamentally important human process, and we've neglected it. And unfortunately, you know, your average Canadian is slightly less active than your typical municipal fire hydrant. We are unbelievably sedentary, and I think it is very important to get outside, smell the roses, chase the fish, you know, wander through the woods kind of things, and the kind of activities that you and your program support are helpful in that respect. But it's also important that people understand that all the stuff I do at work every day, lifting the boxes and moving the stuff to the line and moving back and forth and doing that, you know, I'm pretty active. Well, you're not.
It's not. You know, to those weekend warriors out there listening to the program, whether you know, maybe you play in a beer league at hockey or you're a hunter and you walk the rugged terrain a couple of times a year, it's important that you do it on a more regular basis, maybe less strenuous than playing hockey. As Andrew just mentioned, you know, walking a dog every day is good heart medicine. So it's just, you know, it's food for thought, and it certainly opened my mind an awful lot since things have happened. But I'm happy to tell you, I think I'm around the corner, Andrew. I think I've turned that corner, and I definitely will maintain what I've started. And as I said to you, it will not be a fault of mine if things go back to where they were. It won't be because I've reverted back to it. And that's a powerful thing that having a heart attack does to a person, right? It completely changes your outlook on life.
Yeah, and I think the important thing is that outlook, once it's changed, should be maintained. You know, I think it's fabulous that you're doing as well as you are. Just pleased to note that, and note that that's pretty typical, and continuing to do those ordinary things extraordinarily well, to continue to repeat that phrase, is going to be the secret. And I know, you know, the other thing I want to thank you for is discussing your own situation in this way on your program, and your program reaches a population that is at particularly high risk,
yeah,
and generally is not reached by many of the standard medical messaging and all that sort of stuff, right? You know, males are not particularly good about speaking out about when they're not feeling well, or in fact, even doing anything about it. So your ability to sensitize your listeners in this very important community about this issue and what can be done is really important. I thank you for that.
Oh, are you kidding? It's been a pleasure to be able to watch. I wish I didn't have to have a heart attack to do it, but you know, I'm glad we were in a position to be able to do that anyways, and we will continue to do so. You said something that's kind of interesting. You said men. Just quickly, is this a male-dominated disease?
Well, that's what we always used to think, and, you know, that's what I was taught to. And I think most people still have in their minds that a heart attack is something that is a middle-aged man clutching his chest. And we know that heart disease is actually the leading killer of Canadian women. And
wow,
that's a fact that's completely misunderstood by the population. Now, women tend to be protected from coronary artery disease, or the kind of heart disease that causes heart attacks, as a consequence of their female hormones until such time as they reach menopause. And from that point on, their rates of heart disease actually exceed the rates of heart disease in men.
Wow.
But the other important point is that the symptoms that women may experience may be different. So the classic crushing chest pain going to the jaw, shoulder, and elbow, which we talk about when we talk about men, may not necessarily be experienced by women who may more typically experience very unusual levels of fatigue. They may have back pain. They may have more generalized upper chest discomfort, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, the other issue is that women, and we've been the beneficiaries of this for centuries, right, tend to spend a lot of their time looking after other people. And they say to themselves, I can't take the time to go and get this checked or do that or do this. Mm-hmm. Because I've got to look after my husband and my kids or my mother-in-law or whatever. And so they deny these symptoms. And at every stage of the disease, women are underdiagnosed, undermanaged, and do not participate in rehabilitation programs to the same degree that do men. And so that's been a big wake-up call in the cardiovascular community, as now we really understand the importance of talking about heart disease in women. And we also know that women who experience high blood pressure during pregnancy, which is not uncommon, are particularly at risk of developing heart disease later in life. And so now a focus is on identifying those women during pregnancy and recognizing that they are at very, very much higher risk. So great question, Angelo, and reveals more challenges.
Andrew, always a pleasure having you on the program, and you are a breath of fresh air. You take a subject that otherwise most people don't even like to talk about, and we can discuss. Next time on the show, though, we have to talk about fishing, because
right,
you live in fishing Mecca around the Kingston area. So,
I'm looking out from the shores of Amherst Island today, and it's very inviting.
All right, my friend, take care of yourself. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, you too. Bye-bye, now.
For more information on heart and stroke, you can go to the heartandstroke.ca website. If you want to check out Dr. Pipe and his crew, ottawaheart.ca will get you there as well. More journal after this. Don't you dare go away.